Welcome to the My Ministry Mission podcast, where faith's transformative power comes to life. Be sure to check out this episode's show notes. And if you enjoy this topic, head on over to myministrymission.com to find out how to join our community or even become a guest. God has placed a calling to ministry in my heart, and I'm answering that call. My name is Jason, and this is my mission. Thank you for listening and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Jason McConnell. Today's episode is one that I believe we're going to reach some hidden places. We're talking about shame. We're talking about rebellion. We're talking about believing lies from the enemy and how to break free. Because let's be honest, he doesn't show up in a red suit and a pitchfork. He whispers, he distorts, he convinces us that we are too far gone. Jesus warns us about Satan in John 8, verse 44. When he lies, he speaks his native tongue, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But just a few verses earlier in John 8:32, Jesus tells us, "Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." And that tension between lies and liberty is exactly where we're diving into today. So our guest, Raym Neubauer, is a Christian author, wife, mother of two toddlers. And let's pause there to pray for her stamina right now. But she also holds a degree in Christian missions from North Greenville University. But more importantly, she has a story of radical salvation at an early age, a calling of ministry, a derailment through sin and abuse, 12 years of rebellion, and then surrender, healing, redemption, and restoration. And her book, This Love Is For You, Girl, is a vulnerable, honest testimony of how Jesus redeems what we think is beyond repair. And a second edition just released February 14th. You can visit raymneubauer.com. That's RAHAMENEUBAUER.com. And if that was really fast, go to my show notes and click on the link in there. You can get to all of her information from there. Today's episode is all about how to stop believing the lies of the enemy and start living in the fullness that God intended. So welcome, Raym. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. It's an honor.
Well, it's an honor for me too. I love having guests. I love getting those different perspectives. You know, you have your little faith family, you read your Bible, and you're kind of in a box. And being able to talk to other people with different experiences just opens that up so much. So you're doing me a huge favor by being here.
I completely agree. I love it.
Right on. So let's jump in and get to know you a little bit better, starting with your favorite Bible verse, 2 Corinthians 12, verses 9 through 10. Mm-hmm. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weakness, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weakness, in insults, in hardship, in persecution, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong." Mm-hmm. That is such a beautiful verse. It's one of my favorites. I feel like I say that about all of them, but it really is one of my favorites. So yeah. Tell me how this resonates with you.
Yeah, I like it so much that I have Perfect in Weakness tattooed on my foot, actually, because it just really has been, I don't know, it's kind of been just a life verse for me in this past, 7 to 10 years or so. I think because there was such a long time that I felt so weak in my faith, and I felt like I was failing so much, that to be reminded that he doesn't need me to be strong. He doesn't need me to do anything other than to just put my faith in him has been really, really comforting. And I think as the trials of life come at you, to be reminded that, you know, God is our strength. It just never really gets old. It never really, becomes less amazing.
Yeah, I love that. A tattoo on your foot, that had to hurt.
It hurt really bad. It was awful.
That's some commitment.
It was awful. It's really small. And I'm like, this is the worst pain I might have ever felt. So.
And you're a mother.
And I'm a mom. Yeah. So it was pretty bad. It was bad. I don't really recommend the foot. It's not a good place for a tattoo.
Fair enough. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, you are a wife, a mother of two toddlers, an author, a corporate professional. I mean, like, which role wears you out the most? I have to know.
You know what? I would say the most tiring role is mom. but it is the most fulfilling of the roles. And so it's a good trade-off.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
If your toddlers could describe you in three words, what do you think they would say?
They would say, I'm silly. I'm really silly when I'm with them. You have to be, because they're so silly. Like, you have to give it back, you know? I'm also definitely cuddly. I think the energy, and I think this is pretty common, is I'm very cuddly, affectionate. My husband is like a jungle gym. So that's kind of our roles that we play. You know, he's the one that's going to wrestle on the floor with the 2-year-old boy. And I'm like, come here and cuddle with me. And then I guess thirdly, and this might be a surprise, but they would probably say I'm musical, because I sing with them all the time. We sing every day together.
I love that. Yeah. The dads tend to be the, you know, throw them around and wrestle. Mm-hmm. It's how we cuddle.
Yeah, it is. They need it. They need the two kinds of endorphins, you know, from mom and dad. So it works out good.
So when you're not doing all this crazy stuff, when you're not parenting, what does rest actually look like for you?
I love to read myself. Like, I am a writer, obviously, but I'm a reader as well. And I really just love, after the kids are asleep, I want to take a hot shower and I want to lay across my bed and read a good book. That to me is what rest looks like. It's not very elaborate these days, because it just, you know, it just can't be, but that kind of fills my cup at the end of the day.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I think about that. I always have, like, I still do this today. Every once in a while, I'll be like, yeah, I'm going to go out Friday. We're going to hang out at this, you know, club, place, park, whatever. And then Friday comes and I'm like, I don't want to.
Yeah, I know. I know. Even just like the rare occasion that we get a date night, I'm like, we have to be home by 9:00. Like, I'm too tired to be out any later than that.
Right on. Yeah, it's a thing. It's a thing. I'm 40. I don't have the energy to go out and do stuff. So, about your faith journey. Now, you mentioned becoming a Christian around 12. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, what did surrender look like at that age when you look back on it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I live in South Carolina, and I don't know how much you know about the Southeast, but it's incredibly culturally Christian, right? So there's a church every 10 feet. and it just, especially, like, I was born in, you know, 1987. And at that point, it's like, that's just what you do. Like, there just wasn't an option. Like, you went to church. But in the first 12 years of my life, no one at the church that we attended ever shared the gospel, like the actual gospel, with me. Like, I could tell you who the 12 disciples were. I could tell you a lot of the famous Bible stories, but I did not understand the concept of sin and salvation at all. And I had a very performative view of Christianity, a very checking the boxes. I have to be a good girl and do these things, and that's what matters. That's what's going to get me into heaven. And so at 12, I go to a summer camp for a week, a sleepaway camp. It was a Christian camp. And the camp counselor said, write down on a note card the percentage that you're out of 100 that you're sure that you're going to heaven. And I very confidently wrote down 75%, and I felt great about that. I was like, I'm 75% sure, you know, because I'm a good kid and all these things. And so one by one, they took us, you know, outside by ourselves and shared the gospel with us at this camp. And I always had been seeking God. I just, like, no one told me. And, like, how do you know if nobody tells you? And so once I understood the gospel in that, like, right then and there, I got saved. I was absolutely on fire. I was on board. And then God's provision was just incredible, because I come home from camp and I become best friends with this girl who is still my best friend to this day. And she was in one of those families that, like, they prayed all the time. They didn't just pray before dinner. They didn't just pray before they went to sleep. Prayer was just a part of their life constantly. They talked about the Holy Spirit. They talked about being in relationship with God, like things that I had never been around. And that was immediately following salvation for me. And so I got this incredible exposure from being with her all the time, being in her family home all the time. And I just got hungrier and hungrier. So my faith shaped all the decisions I made through the rest of middle school and high school. Like the way that I lived, the way I interacted with, you know, boys, the way that I didn't party. I didn't, you know, drink. I didn't do it, all these things that these other girls were doing. And then when I was 17, God told me to be, called me to be a missionary. And so I actually made my entire college plan and future plan based on that calling. And I went to a university that had a phenomenal missions program. And that was the path I was going down.
I love that. And I mean, because you did pursue a degree in mission and you plan to serve internationally. Mm-hmm. You know, other than just doing what God tells you, is there anything more to the obedience to God at that stage, or is it just go out there and do it?
Yeah, I was pretty naive. Like I had lived my childhood was kind of like a fairy tale, and I had a very comfortable, supportive home. I had all the resources in the world I could have ever wanted or needed, and I didn't really think much past just, yeah, like you said it, so we're just going to go do it, you know? And then I also too very much believed I was going to be married at 22. Like that was my plan. Like that was what I, because that's what my parents had done. All the women in my family had gotten married really young. So I thought, I'm going to go to college, get a degree in missions. I'm going to get married immediately. And then we're going to move to Africa and we're just going to do ministry, like, and that's where we're going to build our family. And that's what I thought my future was going to be.
Yeah. I have a friend who loves to say, you want to hear God laugh, tell him about your plans.
Yeah. Yeah. He's laughed at me a lot. I can tell you that.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah. It reminded me of verse, Matthew 28, was it 19 or 20? Therefore go and make disciples of all nations. It's not always, you don't always have to go to Africa to do that. Well, it's kind of interesting, but you did mention at one point sinful decisions and abuse that kind of shifted your life. And if you're comfortable sharing that, you know, what started that painful 12 years?
Yeah. So I was 19, and I was dating this guy, and I, you know, we were, I guess you could say, in love, whatever love looks like at that age. And, you know, I still was very much in this mentality of performance. Like I viewed my faith through like, I have to check these boxes. I have to do these things, and not out of like, God, I love you, and I want to obey you because that's my heart's desire, but out of, this is what you're supposed to do, so I have to do it type thing. And which is a very big difference.
It is, absolutely.
And so I was like, well, obviously I'm not going to be intimate with anyone until I'm married. Like that can't happen. That's just not what you do when you're a good Christian girl. And at 19 that changed. And, that act, like in that doing that, that season of my life began an identity crisis for me. Like I didn't know who I was anymore because I'd kind of just always done what I was supposed to do. And the amount of guilt and shame and conviction that I immediately felt, and then not knowing what to do with that, not really getting wise counsel either. Like the only people I was talking to about this were my age, which were not very helpful. And then he, once we began being intimate, he started becoming very emotionally abusive and manipulative. And I believed because he told me that if he were to end the relationship, I would never be wanted again. I would never be able to find a good husband or anything like that because I was, in his opinion, damaged, goods at that point. And so I didn't have anyone telling me otherwise. And that's partially my fault because I wasn't asking, anyone who was older or wiser than me, but that started a total identity crisis for me. And so then there was, I mean, I don't know how many days you have to talk to me because we could probably talk for days, but that turned into 12 years of a lot of men, a lot of sexual abuse. There was some alcohol abuse going on. There was mental health, like depression, anxiety. I didn't want to be here anymore. There was also physical illness that came from that. I was diagnosed with 4 chronic illnesses during that time. Told I would never be able to have children. And I've had 2 babies naturally, and I take 0 medication and am completely, completely freed from every single bit of it. But it was truly hell on earth for 12 years. But the wild thing is, like, I never wasn't a believer. Like, I never denounced my faith. I never, like, didn't believe in Jesus anymore. I was convicted constantly. So it felt like there was a literal war raging within me at all times between what I knew was right per the word of God and what I felt like I needed to do to bring myself, you know, comfort during that time. So it was wild. It was really hard.
And that, I mean, that brings us to when I mentioned the intro, the father of lies. You know, Revelation 12:10 calls him the accuser of brothers and sisters. And sometimes we slip into a point where you actually maybe think to yourself, there's no way somebody could love me the way I am. And you know, and I'm sorry you went through that. I don't know if that's, if you reach that point, but that's a terrible place to be.
Yeah, no, lies that led to the identity crisis were probably the biggest hurdle. And like, you don't know sometimes when you're in it, that it is a lie. Sometimes it can become so deeply ingrained in you that without someone specifically pointing it out or being in the word enough, you really can't see the forest through the trees. And I think the lie of shame was probably the strongest for me in my mind.
So what finally broke the rebellion? What finally broke you free from all of this?
You know, I wish that I had like one moment that I could tell you like this was it, but it was more of a crawl. It was more of a, it was one act of obedience after another. And they were very small at first, but I mean, you get sick and tired of being sick and tired, literally. And I was, you know, had reached rock bottom more times than I could count. And, so in 2017, I would say that was probably the very beginning of it. I served on a mission trip in Kenya for 4 months. I've been trying to serve with this organization for years. Something always got in the way. And I found myself in a position where my company had closed. And I was single and I had no kids and I had no job. And I was like, this is it. Like, I'm going to go do it. So I went for 4 months to Kenya and I was among believers, both native believers and missionaries who had come there, who were literally risking their lives for the gospel every day. I was among people that were serving in North Africa, which is an extremely hostile environment.
The gospel. Especially to Christians. Yep.
Yeah. So I was like sitting in rooms, you know, with people who'd had guns to their head for the gospel. And that you can't come away from that not changed and not like, okay, I really have to like rethink some things here about what I'm prioritizing. And so that was kind of the beginning. And then from 2018 to 2019, I spent a very needed year single, and just focused on like talking to God more every day, getting back into the word. And then 2019 is when things really just started fully breaking free. And it was just acts of obedience and just surrendering and throwing my hands up in the air and saying, enough's enough. I don't want this anymore. I do not want my life anymore. I want you to have my life. I despise this world and I love you and I love your word and I don't want this any longer. And it was like he had been waiting in the wings of a stage. He had been like the whole time, because the sec, I mean, I'm talking immediately, my life just started like unfolding in the most beautiful ways you can possibly imagine. And I'm living out dreams now that I thought would never be fulfilled. I thought it's too late for me. Like, I can't have that. I can't have what I'm living now. And he's gone so far past even what I've asked for. And he loves to do it. And he wants to do it for all of us, honestly.
Yeah. So if there's anyone out there listening, this feels like this is hitting close to home. I suggest they go to the show notes, click on the link and buy your book. You talk about all of this, right? You talk about your, you know, I don't want to say fall, but you know, the your fall into sin and then your redemption.
And, totally.
And what amazes me is when you know, talking to people who have stories like this, it's like at any moment you could step back and make the choice. But it takes, you have to get through so much before you finally realize that. And it just amazes me that, but it's like at some point God whispers in your ear, just follow me. And he leads you out of the darkness.
Yeah. I mean, it's never not it. There's never a time that I've chosen to obey him that it has not been worth it ever. So yeah, I hope, I think there's a lot of messages, obviously, that I want people to take away from my book, but that's certainly one of them.
Right on. So let's talk about your book.
Yeah, sure.
Good segue. What made you decide to go ahead and expose, I don't want to say expose, to share your story publicly?
No, that's fine. Yeah. Well, so crazy enough, I started writing in May of 23, and God had told me about 8 years before that I was going to write a book. And I didn't know what it was really going to be about. Initially, I thought it was going to be something completely different than it was, than what it turned into. And then May of 23, I was in my third trimester with my first baby, which is a crazy time to say, I think I'm going to start writing a book. And he was like, yeah, I'm like, you can barely put a sentence together, right? Like, much less write a whole book. So, but he said, go. I was like, okay. So I started writing, and it was kind of one of those things that like his grace was on it the entire time. The words just poured out of me like water, honestly. And it just came together, in the most beautiful way. And the whole process, you know, writing process was 18 months. And within that time I had two babies, literally.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was, I don't know what happened other than God's grace on it, because typically people would probably not decide to do both of those things at one time, but here we are.
That's wonderful though. Like, get it all done one right up front.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, no, that's great. So was writing part of your healing?
Yes, but it always was. So even part of what I did when I was writing this book is I went back and I had journals from 2006 all the way through. And like, I probably was writing before that, but they, you know, those things have disappeared into the garbage at some point, but I had them from 2006, and being able to look back at some of that and see like who I was in those years and how much, I was battling and how much I was struggling. It was interesting, and it was hurt. It was painful, you know, to reread some of that, but it was also, the whole thing was incredibly, incredibly cathartic, because there is so much to my story. It's really God's story, but there's so much to it. There's no way to tell somebody in a conversation. Like, you'd have to get it in writing like I did to get it all out, because it's just so robust. Like, the transformation that has taken place and the experiences that I've lived it's just too much to say. And so to finally get it all out in one place feels amazing. That's all great. Yeah. But I mean, like, it's vulnerable. Like, it's real vulnerable, obviously, to put this type of thing out into the world. But I never doubted doing it. I never questioned it. Thankfully, my husband has been very supportive the entire time. I don't think I could have done it, you know, without his blessing, obviously. But I have known so strongly from the beginning that it was a command, A, and B, that like at the end of my life, I'm not going to care what anybody thought about me or what they called me or what I did or didn't do that they might have not liked. I'm going to care about how much my life glorified the Father. That's what I'm going to care about. And if I have to be vulnerable to do that, then I'm game. I'm down.
I like that. I mean, you're so convicted, you released the second edition.
I did. Yeah, I did release the second edition. It's very different. The second half is very, very different than the first. Wildly enough, I published the first edition November of 24, 3 weeks after I had my second baby. And in the year that followed, I experienced more radical transformation, healing, and deliverance than I had in all the years as a Christian combined leading up to it. And so I had no choice but to say the story wasn't over and there are things that needed to be updated, corrected, added, edited, lots of things. So it is now the book it was always meant to be, and it's available. So
that's wonderful. So thank you. When you say this love is for you, girl, who is the girl?
Oh gosh, just anybody. Like it's a colloquial phrase. Like that's just how I would talk, you know, like this love is for you, girl. Like that's just something. And so it's not like any particular person, and it's not even just girl. There is a lot in it because I'm a female, and speaking from a female perspective that I think women can obviously relate to, but the principles in it are biblical. And so it is for anybody, any person. But I wanted it to feel very conversational, like we were just sitting down to have a cup of coffee together or going to lunch. So it definitely reads that way, because I want people to feel like they really are with me, and I want them to feel comfortable when they're reading it.
Excellent. Yeah, love it. Do you feel like it's a modern prodigal story?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, I relate a lot to that story, obviously, especially just, I don't know, I think about that image sometimes of the father when the prodigal son comes home and he's like, running. He's probably super old too at the time. And he's like running to meet, you know, his son that has just gone and squandered all of his wealth. But he's so excited that he's coming home that he can't even wait for him to walk all the way up to the house. He's running out to meet him and just throws his arms around his neck. And that's exactly the experience that I've had with God.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story. I mean, not you personally, but I mean, the story talks about being, you know, in the slop with pigs when you finally mm-hmm. go, enough is enough. I'm going home.
Yeah.
And, you know, you think about the travel there the whole way, you know, they're going to be so disappointed in me. You know, they're going to be angry at me, all the mind talk. And then you get there and you're met with just, like you said, arms wide open, running. Mm-hmm. To meet the son mm-hmm. and nothing but love. And it's a wonderful imagery of what God is willing to do if we just let him.
Totally. Totally. You're right.
So what are the top I can't talk today. What are the top three lies that you think Christian women believe in our modern time?
Yeah. I think there's a lot, but I think one of them is the concept that we should be strong enough to hold it all on our own. I think that's become much more rampant with social media, and everyone has a curated life and it looks beautiful from the outside. And we start to believe that, you know, success in life comes from our own strength. And I think obviously my favorite verse in 2 Corinthians speaks to this a lot, that you will never be strong enough. Like you will never be able to hold it, all the pieces together. And we live in a time when many women work and are moms and are trying to keep a house together. And just the way that our economy is set up, that's extremely common right now. And if I did not rely on God as my breath, like literally my sustenance, my life every day, I would just be like falling out in the floor because it just is too much to hold. And I think we have to stop thinking that it's on us to do that because it isn't.
That's a good one. Yep. Yeah.
The second one I would say is that I think the lie is that we are forgotten in our daily mundane lives, that as we're folding the laundry or we're doing dishes or we're packing lunches or we're on a corporate call or whatever it is that we're doing, that we're just kind of, insignificant. And I would say that God is El Roy. He is the God who sees, and he sees you and he cares about you. When you're folding the laundry, like he wants to be invited into those moments. And many of the best conversations that I have with God on a regular basis happen in those mundane moments when I pause long enough to think, like to think about him and just to talk to him. As the chaos is around me and I'm stepping on Legos and all the all the things. And if you've stepped on a Lego, you know it feels like your soul's gonna leave your body.
Yes, like, it does.
It's so painful. But that's when he wants us to meet with him the most. Like, it doesn't have to be this spectacular thing where you are worshiping in a beautiful environment. He just wants to be in the day to day.
I think it's funny you mention that. I think I've had some of the most profound conversations or moments with God when I'm washing my car or doing dishes or folding laundry. Mm-hmm. Because we're not distracted by the work we're doing. We're on autopilot and able to just drift away and listen to the Spirit.
Absolutely. I
love that one.
And the third I would say is that, that people pleasing is required of us. And I've learned recently that the drive to people please is the fear of man. And when we start putting, wanting to please everyone above being obedient, which we do, we have a tendency to do that, especially as women. We are caregivers and we want everyone to be happy with what we're doing and with our performance. And it can lead us to a place where we're putting that above what God's told us to do. And sometimes what he's told us to do is not popular or is not as curated as what people want. So I think that's really specific to this time, like in history as well.
Yeah. I mean, Jesus warned us, if they hate you, the world hated me first. Mm-hmm. So they're never going to make everyone happy for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So is there anything a listener could start doing this week to start seeing through the enemy's lies? Like, what is step number one, do you think?
I would say step number one is to learn what God says about you. And to do that, you need to get in the Word and you need to talk to him, but learn what he says about you. Like, he says that you are forgiven, accepted, loved, healed, redeemed, chosen, freed, rescued. I mean, he says, and many more things. That's what he says about you. And that's not what the world's going to say about you. And so the first thing is you have to know what your identity is. You have to know the truth before you can proclaim it over your life. So I would say learn what that is if you're unsure. There's lots of resources that can help you learn what that is. The Bible's the main one, but there's others as well. and then secondly, I would say proclaim, like out loud, verbally proclaim truth over yourself and over your family. The Bible tells us that the power of life and death is in the tongue. And so your words matter. What you say about yourself matters. You start to believe what you say. And so start talking about yourself literally the way that God talks about you. and watch how your beliefs about yourself change, your mindset about yourself will change. When we speak the lies, we're just giving them more and more and more power. That's what our energy and focus is going to. So proclaim what he says about you over you. Always, I would say, get in the secret place as much as you possibly can with him. Just get in the quiet. And then lastly, connect with other people. I think if you're a man, it really is important to get this probably from some other men. And I think women, it's really important to get it from other women. Connect with people who are going to proclaim the truth over you as well, who are going to remind you who you are in Christ, remind you of what your identity is.
Yeah, I love that you added community in there, because community is so important when you're fighting the enemy. You know, it's a, you know, Jesus tells us where two or three gather in my name, there I'll be with you. He also tells us, and I forget the verse and the exact wording, but basically, if you're not doing this as a community, you're not doing it right. Like, you're not really you're not really practicing the faith if you're just refusing to go out there and be with other people, and you're just not there.
Like, yeah,
I wish I could remember the verse in the.
No, it's important. I agree with you. I mean, it's much easier to believe a lie when you're isolated or when you feel isolated.
Absolutely.
than when you're among like-minded people.
Absolutely. So, spill the tea. Are you working on any other books?
Not yet, but I do have ideas. I have a couple of ideas. So,
right on.
Yeah, stay tuned. I think yeah. I'll know when it's the right time, but yeah, there will be more for sure.
Yeah. Right. Visit your website, RavenNewBauer.com.
Yes.
Just
yes.
Another plug there.
Yeah.
As we wrap this up, I want to ask you this one question, for the women listening right now. And I know the book is, you know, it can be men or women, but for the women listening right now who feel suffocated by the shame, what would you say to her?
I would say to her or to you, whoever you are that's listening, shame is a lie. You are so loved. And one of my favorite things to do is to acknowledge God as Abba, because that name really means like dad or papa or daddy, like any of those like very comforting words that we use for dad. And I just think of myself crawling up in his lap and just getting a big old bear hug from him. And that's what I needed, was that type of love and acceptance and comfort when I was in the worst of it. And he wants to be that for you. And when he looks at you, if you are a follower of Christ, he does not see any of what you've done. And you can put it to bed. You can put it down, because it does not serve you anymore.
I love that. That's so wonderful. Do you have any other last words for the listeners?
I don't think so. Other than God loves you. That's all I got.
That's a good way to end. That's a good way to stop. Rahim, I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. You know, if you're listening out there, go to the show notes, click on the website, check out the book. I know God is speaking through you. And to someone out there today, you know, I hope you're listening. I want to thank you for doing this, for being the hands and feet of Christ today.
I want to thank you for doing the same thing, because that's exactly what you are as well. So
I
appreciate you. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, God bless you, Rahim. Thank you.
Thanks. You too.
And for the listeners, until next time, keep loving your neighbors, dive into God's word daily, and may the Lord bless you and keep you and fill you with his peace. Take care. God bless. And I'll see you in the next episode. You've been listening to the My Ministry Mission podcast, hosted by me, Jason McConnell. If today's episode spoke to you, I'd love for you to like, follow, or subscribe me on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss what's next. Be sure to check out this episode's show notes for links and resources from today's conversation. And my prayer for you is this: keep walking with Christ, trusting his plan, and living out the mission God has placed in your heart.